Mr. Hendricks was very, very happy that the sentence imposed was not death. Mr. Hendricks was also very, very happy to hear the judge's statement that the judge didn't believe personally that guilt was proved beyond a reasonable doubt. Based upon that, Mr. Hendricks is looking forward to an appeal.
One of David Hendricks' two defense attorneys, John Long. Today, David Hendricks was sentenced to prison for life without parole. In about 14 months since the bodies of his wife and their three children were found in their home on Carl Drive, Hendricks' trial moved to Rockford. There, a jury convicted him. In Bloomington today, Judge Richard Boehner sentenced David Hendricks to life in prison without parole. Good evening. This is a WJBC News special report. The judge, the prosecution, the defense, the jury, people on the streets. You'll hear what they had to say to David Hendricks about David Hendricks and what he had to say to them. We begin our special report with Steve Ogle, who was in the McLean County courtroom when Hendricks was sentenced today.
The hearing was to begin at 4 o'clock. More than an hour before that, the line had begun to form outside the courtroom. At about 3:45, a crowd that obviously would not fit into the courtroom had gathered, all wanting to see the sentencing of the man who was arguably McLean County's best-known resident and most famous criminal. The courtroom doors were opened. Sheriff Steve Breenan announced that members of Hendricks' family would be admitted first, then the news media, and then the general public. Each person was searched with a metal detector. A few minutes before 4 o'clock, each spectator seat was filled. Perhaps up to 20 persons were still outside. They would not get in. As 4 o'clock arrived, the courtroom crowd became quiet. 3 minutes later, David Hendricks, dressed in one of the three business suits he wore throughout the trial, was brought in. He began to sit down at his regular seat at the far end of the defense table, but one of his attorneys, John Long, motioned for him to sit between him and co-counsel Harold Jennings. The bailiff intoned the familiar "all rise," a statement that falls partway between an order and tradition. As the spectators, attorneys, and Hendricks rose, Judge Richard Boehner of Woodford County Court, the judge who had taken the case on 2 weeks' notice, took his seat high upon the bench. He said the courtroom would be locked until the sentencing hearing was complete, and if anyone wanted to leave before then, they should do so now. No one left. And then he began his sentencing statement. He read from a 5-page, single-spaced document that would be made available to the press later. Judge Boehner listed the factors he considered in setting the sentence, aggravating factors such as the seriousness of the offense, its brutality, the ages of the victims, the number of people killed, but mitigating factors too, like Hendricks' lack of a prior criminal record, his past activity within his church, his charitable acts, his employment history, support of his family, his medical and intellectual abilities. And then Judge Boehner went on. I read from his statement now. Certainly some of the cases I've studied present more grotesque and brutal deaths than does this case, and the reasons for some of those murders were equally obscure. This case, however, demonstrates an amazing and almost unbelievable disregard for human life. Not only the family ties, but the history of a demonstrable loving relationship between the defendant and each victim makes it next to impossible for any reasonable human being to understand or to accept any reasoning behind the moments of horror that occurred at 313 Carl Drive on November 6, 1983. As the judge read, Hendricks made notes on a legal notepad. The judge went on. Three beautiful children will never blossom into the individuals they could have become. A young mother will never know the future joys of watching and guiding the growth of those children. While these same particular circumstances are not likely to recur, the defendant's apparent total disregard for the value of these lives presents a permanent and ongoing danger to society with no reasonable basis to anticipate correction. While it is a possibility, I am not convinced that the defendant was under the influence of extreme mental or emotional disturbance at the time of each murder, and I cannot assume that. He was merely because of the senseless brutality of the murder scene. The jurors in this case were convinced beyond a reasonable doubt of the defendant's guilt, the judge went on. That decision was a result of their regular and conscientious attention to the evidence, which was capably presented in great detail and subjected to intensive cross-examination over the lengthy span of this trial. They can probably be agreed that the key factual issue in the trial was the actual time of the children's death. The proof on this issue was presented through the opinions of experts and the factual determination relied entirely upon the relative persuasive ability of qualified experts who differed dramatically with each other. I have already determined that the totality of the evidence was legally sufficient to reach the jury for its consideration, and this continues to be my conclusion today. The judge continued, many prospective jurors stated during the jury selection process that they would consider the death penalty as an appropriate sentence only if they were personally convinced beyond a reasonable doubt of the defendant's guilt. This is the appropriate legal standard, and I also accept it as a proper moral standard. Now Hendricks stopped writing on his legal pad and looked directly at the judge. The judge read on. I personally believe that the defendant probably did commit these offenses, and I must emphasize that I intend no criticism of the jury or its verdicts by this sentencing order. Based upon the evidence admitted on trial against the defendant, I am not personally convinced that he's been proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Some might say this is a distinction without a difference. However, I feel the very fabric of our justice system depends on this distinction. If the sentence issue were anything other than the most severe and irreversible sanction of death, I would disregard my own concern over the level of proof and render sentence based on the verdicts as I have done many times before in other cases. However, as to the sanction of death, I hold the same position as do some or perhaps even all of the jurors. I cannot in good conscience apply the sanction of death unless I have been convinced of his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. I have not, and mere belief is not enough. Having regard to the nature and the circumstances of the offenses, which were not all a part of a single course of conduct, and the history and character of the defendant, I find that the sentence imposed is required to protect the public from further criminal conduct by the defendant, the basis therefore being described in this already lengthy order. And then the judge imposed a sentence, 4 consecutive terms of natural life in prison with no chance of parole. A fine of $44,000 plus the cost of the trial, which could put Hendricks' total tab at $100,000. The judge placed a lien on all property owned by Hendricks as of December 22, 1983. The courtroom quickly emptied, the news media pushing past the spectators outside the courtroom, some of whom had been watching through a glass in the courtroom door, unable to hear, but able to see that David Hendricks sat passively as he learned he would not be put to death, but was ordered to spend the rest of his life in prison for killing Susan, Becky, Grace, and Benji Hendricks with an axe. Steve Ogle, WJBC News.
The defense attorneys for David Hendricks say they're not sure how Hendricks feels at this time. Steve Ogle spoke with defense attorney Harold Jennings.
Well, I'm pleased as far as the issue of life and death is concerned. My position was yesterday that regardless of personal or legal beliefs as far as guilt or innocence is concerned, that death is not appropriate for David Hendricks. So from a personal standpoint as well as a professional standpoint, I am extremely pleased with the judge's decision allowing the man to at least continue some sort of life regardless of the outcome of the appeal. As far as the appeal is concerned, I still believe it will be successful, but on the limited issue of life or death, I support the judge's decision. I think it's reasonable. I think it's personally well-founded and legally well-founded.
Now, the judge's statement about he has some doubts that Hendricks was found guilty beyond a reasonable doubt indicate to you that had it been a bench trial, Judge Boehner would have found Mr. Hendricks not guilty.
Well, I don't think the judge said that, but I think he came close to saying that. I think what the judge was saying is that if he were not a judge, if he were not an attorney, if he were not bound by legal standards and legal rules, if he were simply a layman serving as a juror listening to the same set of facts, that he might have voted for an acquittal. He might have, if not voted for an acquittal, been unable to reach a verdict based on proof beyond a reasonable doubt. I don't think the judge is telling us what he would have done or how he feels or whether he agrees or disagrees with the jury verdict. I think what he is saying is that he is uncomfortable from a personal standpoint in imposing the death sentence in a case that is solely circumstantial, that is highly questionable, and where the evidence of guilt is not clear and convincing. And I think this is simply a personal and moral judgment made by the man as to the appropriateness of the death penalty in his view of the evidence as a human being, as opposed to what he is obliged to do as a judge or as a lawyer.
As you heard the statement read, the way I interpreted it as it went along, I thought for a while he was veering toward the death penalty. Then it became clear, of course, that he was not. Did you have the same feeling?
No, I really, over the course of 20 years plus, when a judge makes findings of fact and when he is doing what Judge Boehner was doing this afternoon, my feeling is that you never count your chickens. The fact is that if a judge is doing his job, he will tell you what the issues are on both sides. When he's discussing pro issues in his order, your emotional reaction is uh-oh. When he's discussing con issues, then your reaction is, well, he's talking about my side and my position, but the order is the order and the finding is the finding. So I simply was not sure of what he was going to do until he did what he did, which was, of course, the bottom line.
How did Mr. Hendricks react?
I don't honestly know. The fact is that I think David at this point suffers from the same numbness that we all do to some degree. Those of us that have been involved in the case from the beginning, even you, as far as your involvement in it as a press participant and an observer, I know that we all still feel some numbness and generalized fatigue, and I'm sure that Dave feels the same way. It's simply another step in a long and arduous process for everybody involved in the thing.
What did he say to you?
He said nothing.
Nothing at all?
He has said nothing other than to ask questions pertaining to the motions that we were making and the issues raised by the judge's order. This is consistent with David. The fact is he will inquire, he will ask questions, he will attempt to understand. His emotional and personal reaction will be later. It may be tonight, it may be tomorrow, it will be next week, but it will be in private.
Based upon previous discussions with him, do you think he is pleased he did not get the death penalty?
Well, I would assume that if he is in fact what I believe him to be, that being a rational human being, that given a choice between life and death, he, like I, would opt for life.
One of the defense attorneys for David Hendricks, Harold Jennings, speaking with WJBC's Steve Vogels shortly after David Hendricks was sentenced to life in